My name is Clancy Emerson. I'm an alcoholic. Glad to be here this morning. Pretty good size group to discuss such dreadful things as the traditions. The problem with dealing with the traditions, most people just, in much of the country, they just feel the traditions are something. The only reason they have them read is to see if newcomers can pronounce autonomous or anonymity. And in many areas, they don't read them at all. I was noticing in the New York meeting the other day, they didn't read the traditions, because they don't read the traditions in New York much. I've never heard them read when I was at a meeting there. And this, nothing much of a deal, it's just stuff. And it's hard to remember that in certain areas, the traditions are the most important therapeutic we have. The steps certainly resolve our individual attempts to return to life, but if there's no place to return to, it is of no value. The traditions are, you know, so often people, especially new people, they think, well, here's the steps and here's the traditions, and they all wrote them in the book in 1939, and it was all very nice. And it's hard to remember. The steps were written, of course, in 1938 and published in that book. But the traditions were not, there were no traditions, because Bill and Bob did what almost every other founder of major spiritual movements do. They operate under the illusion that the purity of our purpose is so wonderful that we need no rules, that our purity of purpose will keep us on the path. And such motives are really grand, except for one thing they forget. That organizations are not made up of ideals, they are made up of human beings. And human beings are fallible and mistake-prone and unknowingly corruptible and just diversified aims and goals, even operating under the same general spiritual aim, as it were. So is the early years of AA. There were a lot of problems. I mean, they didn't know what to do about them because there's no rules, there's no laws, there's no way to enforce anything. Guy in Florida was selling AA memberships. They wrote to him and said, you shouldn't do that. He said, why not? And they had no answer for that one. Well, because we don't think you should. Well, I think I should. What do you think of that? You know. And that great story about the possibly apocryphal about the club that put 61 rules on the wall of what you should do to become a member, and finally Bill Wilson theoretically came by and put in rule 62 that said don't take yourself so damn seriously. But on and on, there have always been members of AA who have pushed it to the wall, to the limits, and when there were no limits, they pushed it a long way. And the net result of this, of course, was not nothing so bad, you know. One of the big splashes of AA was when the catcher for the Cleveland Indians announced publicly that he was an AA, and they had pictures of him in all the sport pages in 1940. A guy named Raleigh Helmsley. He was famous because he was Bob Feller's catcher, and they all was, yes, I'm an AA, and people were very interested in. All sorts of people were breaking their anonymity. Bill Wilson went on tour breaking his anonymity in city after city to show the wonderful work AA was doing. There were no laws, there were no rules. Everybody felt the wonderfulness of what we're doing will save us. But what in reality happened, of course, more and more people got drunk, more and more people died. And eventually, Bill is in his obsessive introspection, start thinking about what can we do to formulate at least some suggestions, because he noticed as he was getting correspondence from all over the world, he answered all the correspondence for a long time. In the early 1940s, mid-40s, he was still answering questions from groups. What do we do when a member does this? What do we do when a member does that? And he wanted to write every answer because he wanted to make sure it was done right. And because he felt it would come apart if he, if it just some guy came in and wrote an answer. But he began to realize he couldn't keep it up. It was growing. There were thousands of people out there. And they were noticed that many of the questions from all over the world were the same. And he began to realize there are certain basic things that trouble people in AA. And if we don't find solutions for them, they go down the toilet. We lose enough people without unnecessarily losing them. And then someone called his attention. He had begun to formulate in his mind a little bit what maybe some things he could discuss. Then in 1945, a member submitted an article to the Grapevine about something Bill Wilson had never heard of. This article was about something called the Washingtonians, a group that had been in the 19th century, 1840. And he explained the difference between the Washingtonian goals and the Washingtonian demise. And Bill got very interested in this. And he did some quick studies on it and worked on it, dug out some literature on it. And he began to see a correlation. If any of you don't know who the Washingtonians are, they are the only other group in history that ever had any large number of sober alcoholics. Six guys got together in a bar in Baltimore in 1840 and said, Jesus, we're going to die. Let's stop drinking. So they got some other guys. And over a short period of time, they formulated a group that was in many ways similar to what AA is. It's really remarkable. I just set up a policy where people would go from town to town. They would share speakers to talk about alcoholism. They'd talk about their experiences with alcoholism. They'd try to help others. It was really a thing. And they just grew tremendously because nothing had ever been like this before. By 1845, it is estimated there were 100,000 sober alcoholics up and down the eastern seaboard and as far west as Ohio. Now that's a hell of a lot faster than AA grew in its first 5 years, I'll tell you. And it was a great thing. And they began to just feel, we can help everybody. And they got into a fatal problem. Bill Wilson, writing in Grapevine at the end of 1945, was commenting what he had learned. He said they seemed to have certain things that troubled them, such as excessive publicity seeking. Because when they went to talk somewhere, they had an article in the paper saying, John Anderson from Baltimore will discuss alcoholism tonight. And people would fight over who got the most publicity and who got the most importance. They fought over who was president of the various chapters. They got deep into self-aggrandizement. They lost their singleness of purpose. First of all, they thought that now we can cure people who have laudanum problems, which was the drug of its day. Then some of the people got into abolition. Abraham Lincoln addressed several Washingtonian movements about the problem of slavery. But everybody who had something to do, let's bring it to the Washingtonians and we'll solve it. And everybody went at full speed and doing these things. By the end of the 1840s, the movement was for all intents and purposes extinct. There were no sober alcoholics left. There were some abolitionists left in the Washingtonians. There were some people who had political access to grind, but all the sober alcoholics were drunk again. Apparently, or they're gone somewhere. Many of them dead. And it was so completely wiped out that Bill Wilson, the founder of AA, had never heard of it in 1945. Now that's a big wipeout. So he codified what he thought based on what he saw in the Washingtonians, based on the letters he got from all over the world, based on what he saw, based even on what he felt. One of the great traditions that we still try to follow is the I want to quote it exactly correctly. He wrote in the spring of, or the summer of 1946, they published his suggestions. He made it particularly strong in the grapevine. You got to remember, the grapevine at that time is, in a sense, the official sounding board for Bill Wilson. When he had something to say, he put it in the grapevine, article after article after article. And he introduced these 12 traditions the way Annette read them this morning. That was the original form of the 12 traditions, the long form. But he also expressly said, these are not laws, these are not rules, these are just suggestions that you may wish to follow. To many of us who have become old right-wing fascist AA pigs, we always wish there were laws that we could punish people with, you know. Especially if you're a sponsor. For example, Gene was talking yesterday about sponsorship. In my areas, there are some people who feel I'm a fascist-type sponsor. And it's impossible to be a dictator-type sponsor without the full consent of the sponsee, because all they ever have to say is screw you, and the relationship is over. There's no rules or laws. I've always thought it would be nice if we could have people who came in the night said, did you say screw you to your sponsor? Did you break one of the traditions? Come with us. Yeah. We'd teach him. We'd teach him love. But there's no rule. The only thing that's important about them is, it turns out if you ignore them long enough, pretty soon you drift off. And all your knowledge of the steps are fine if you can live in a vacuum, but very few of us can. And that's why these traditions are most valuable. I started to say, the one that really was maybe the last one written, formulated in Bill's mind. Some of you saw the, in 1945, some of you know, Marty Mann, the first woman who stayed sober, founded the National Council on Alcoholism, is going to revolutionize, and she went around the country breaking ground and everybody said, I'm sacrificing myself for the good of others. And she got Bill Wilson and Dr. Bob on her board of directors and her letterheads. It said Board of Trustees, William Wilson, Dr. Robert Smith, didn't say they were AAs, and so on. And this created such a terrible stink around AA, terrible feelings, you know, because some of the people were in favor of it and some of them didn't. And Bill Wilson was going west. I was sorry to say, you saw the TV picture about Bill Wilson a few months ago, where at the end he sat in a little meeting in San Bernardino, and nobody knew who he was. And he just had to talk to a newcomer. God, that's a tough feeling, I'll tell you. But he was on the way west. He was on the way west because he's going out to talk to some AAs in Los Angeles and to act as technical advisor on a movie called The Lost Weekend. And on that trip, they got a hold of him in Los Angeles and said, AA is coming apart if you don't do something about your membership in the National Council on Alcoholism. So he sent a 4-page telegram. That's a long telegram to send back to put in the grapevine, explaining that he was having his name taken off the letterhead and formulated, for other reasons besides that, number 10, Alcoholics Anonymous has no opinion on outside issues, hence the AA name ought never be drawn in public controversy. In the long form, it talks about we are not involved with anything here. So in 1946, these traditions were introduced. Now, Alcoholics Anonymous members were the same then as they are now. They resist change. It created a firestorm. A lot of people said, what good ideas. But most of AA said, baloney. We don't want any stinking rules. You know, we're here to find spiritual freedom. Don't tell me what I can do. And there was a big hoorah about it. Bill wrote several articles in the grapevine in his house organ in the 1950s or 40s. 1949 about, he published the short form of the tradition to make them more realistic. And then in 1950, they brought these traditions to the first International Convention of AA, which again was not almost held, because AAs then were just the way they are now. Some said, we'll have it in Akron, we won't have it. Some said, we'll have it in New York, or we won't have it. We'll show you maturity, you son of a bitch. You know, they finally had a compromise on Cleveland so they could all go there and not feel hurt. True story. But at that convention, among other things, they introduced the 12 traditions formally. I have some tapes home of that convention of guys taking one tradition at a time and getting up and talking for 15 or 20 minutes on that tradition, trying to explain to people that they're nothing to be afraid of, they're not laws, and we should just take them as advisories. And these guys are really earnest guys. And you hear those tapes one after another, and these guys trying to describe them. And in 1950, so then they accepted them. They accepted the traditions in 1950 at that convention. Only one change was made. From the way Bill had originally issued them in 1949, there's only been one change in the tradition since they were written in 1949. Some of you know who that is, of course. That's in the third tradition. It originally read, the only requirement for membership is an honest desire to stop drinking. And after they begin to thinking about that, they begin to realize only people who have been here a while have an honest desire to stop drinking. That's an old-timer's tradition. The only requirement for membership is a desire, any kind of desire, just to get her off my back or hold that job. That's all we need. We can learn the niceties later. So here are the traditions, and they've been here ever since. And they are, seems like sometimes they are honored more in the breach than are in the observance. And they're all quite simple. There's nothing very complex about them. People like to read meaningful things into them. But they mean, very much like the steps, they mean, I have to really watch the time this morning. I'm not holding off dinner, I'm holding off Al-Anons. You don't know what it's like to be released by a group of Al-Anons. And they start on time, and so it's kind of tough, you know. Finish your talk, and there's a discussion group going on over there. But I don't want to make trouble. But they're very much like the steps. They mean what they say. Most of us are always looking for deep secret meanings in things. What does that really mean? You know, I remember when I was new many years ago, sitting in a couple meetings where they had to go for two meetings, where they were deciding, what's the difference between defects of character and shortcomings? In one step it says shortcomings, the next step says defects of character. Now there's a metaphysical difference. What do you think it is? And finally, some old fool brought a letter from a grapevine article from Bill Wilson, which he had said, I'd use those two phrases so I wouldn't be redundant in following steps. That doesn't stop me. I know there's a secret meeting there somewhere. Don't read that crap around here, you know. But it's really what makes it so difficult is people like us who feel we are so terminally complex can't accept that there might be simple solutions. So the purpose of staying in AA is little by little simplifying AA till it gets down to where it is. As Dr. Bob said in 1950, that same convention, you know, the last analysis, AA is just love and service. Now, these are just ways we do it. But people like to read metaphysical things. But today there is not much difficulty with these traditions. As I had read them, We understand that AA unity certainly is necessary. We never have it, but it's certainly necessary. It's a goal to shoot for, because AA unfortunately is made up of human beings, and human beings are incapable of perfection. So we live with pettinesses and upsets and so on. But we know that we try to achieve AA unity, even though we know you shouldn't go to that group or that group, just go to this group. And we know that you must not listen to conflicting data, because we all have our own strong opinions as human beings, but we try to think AA should be what it is. In fact, I sometimes am glad. I've always secretly envied something my wife has. She can go to church anywhere in the world, and she knows she's going to hear a Catholic Mass. That's going to be pretty much the same thing. Where I go, you can't even find Lutherans. You know, they're underground in Italy, in the catacombs, being brought up to the Colosseum to be devoured by Italians. But in AA, that's one thing nice about AA, if you ever travel a lot, there are different forms, but you sit down and they start to read the 12 steps and you get the feeling, now I know where I am now, I know what to do now. And the 12 traditions are much the same. There is AA unity, we aim for it. For our group purpose, there is one ultimate authority, a loving God as he may express himself through our group conscience. Some groups have individual group consciences, but theoretically it's a group conscience. I know that I started a group once in Los Angeles. It was in my zeal and ego, I ran as a fiefdom for a while. And I made a mistake one day. I had an open election, swept out of office. I'd only been secretary going on 3 years, crisis. I felt like I was president at the birth of an African nation, not ready for self-government, yet they insist on it. But one thing I always did in that group, and I think it's good to do, that was the first group I ever saw where we had secret ballots, so anyone could express their real feelings without it being judged. Whenever you have an AA ballot, I think it's a great place to have a secret ballot. I've watched so many places people go to hell, they're saying, and now we'll all sit here. Who wants Betty? And Betty turns around, and Fred turns around and says, you dirty fink, I'll get you later. You're like, you know, on and on. And it shouldn't be that way, but we're human beings. But the group conscience, the vote of the group conscience, should hold it. One thing that is under stress and attack today, continues to be, and I think we have to do something to remember it, is in the third tradition, where the only requirement for membership is a desire to stop drinking. And the fifth tradition, which says, each group has but one primary purpose, to carry its message to the alcoholic who still suffers. Not to the compulsive eater, not to the compulsive gambler, not to the narcotic addict, but to the... Now, why is this so important? Is it some sort of an egotistical thing? Is it some sort of holier than thou? Not at all. It gets back to the root of what makes AA successful. Duffy mentioned it. Paul mentioned it. But it always gets back to this. What makes AA different than any other therapy in the treatment of alcoholism in the last 5,000 years, except the Washingtonians, it's one alcoholic talking to another alcoholic, which hopefully helps him reduce his feelings of difference at least enough so that he will begin to take actions he does not yet believe in. That is what AA is. And no matter what you would like to think, or I would like to think, it is hard enough to find a connection in a drinking problem. I get no relationship from a compulsive eater, for example. That is why these other organizations were formed. All of these, I've watched every one of these other 12-step programs formed. Most of them were formed within a few blocks of me in Los Angeles. Narcotics Anonymous formed at the North Hollywood Club. Why did they form Narcotics Anonymous? So that narcotics addicts could have a place to identify with other narcotics addicts. And not have to imagine, well, maybe that way for alcoholics, but my case is different. And then in 1959 or 60, they started Overeaters Anonymous. And they went to the AA club and got, they had nobody on abstinence yet. And there were about seven fat Jewish ladies meeting at Our Savior's Episcopal Church on Olympic Boulevard. So they came over and got speakers. And I went over and spoke for them. I weighed about 125 pounds then. I was a... had no front teeth, but I was a good one to talk about. They wanted me to talk about obsessions. So I talked about obsessions and how it must be. Then, I remember, I must have had to be the second or third speaker, and I spoke there every couple of weeks for about 6 months until they finally had decent speakers. But I remember sitting there, and I was really trying to help these women in my benighted way, but they get talking. After I get done talking, they'd talk about their experiences. And I was appalled at what I was hearing. These people were saying, then I finished off the chicken and I ate a cake. And I thought to myself, Jesus, what sick beast. Mm-hmm. Remember a woman saying, I ate till I couldn't eat anymore. I had to go to the bathroom and put my finger down my throat and come back so I could eat some more. And I thought, you ought to be in the insane asylum. You are a sick bitch. I didn't say anything because I don't make trouble, but I'll tell you. I thought, can't you eat like a man, for Christ's sake? Have three meals and let a ghoul attack you. Going in and throwing up food so you can eat more? I can see doing that for drinking, but food? As understanding as I wanted to be, I could not understand what they were doing. I could understand it intellectually, but I had no identification. And they formed Gamblers Anonymous about that same time. And I went to some of their meetings, went to talk at a couple of their meetings, because they had AAs come and talk at first. And these guys talking about, and then I got together again and went down to Gardena. I played the low ball and I lost it. Jesus, you're goofy, you know. And then you went to Las Vegas. Why don't you just get a job and straighten out? Why do they form these organizations? So that people could identify with other people of the same persuasion, the same feeling, so they can say, yes, I know how you feel, not, oh, I know how it must be. How sad for you, my dear. We've all heard that crap all our lives. And then 1970s, formed Cocaine Anonymous. I guess I talked at one of their first meetings out of the Marina Mercy Hospital. Same thing. And I know why they did it, but I couldn't understand why the hell they were taking cocaine. But I understand why drinkers drink, because I know what that means. I can identify with that. The concept of all these organizations is so that you will have someone to identify with. Now, don't misunderstand me. No one in AA ever says you cannot be an alcoholic and something else. In fact, some people carry it to bizarre extremes. That is what they're trying to prove, you know. I'm an alcoholic, and a narcotic addict, and an overeater, and a codependent, and by that time you just, who cares? Who cares? This is Alcoholics Anonymous, not a recitative of your goddamn weaknesses. You know. We don't judge. But that is why And it's expressly said in our pamphlets, it's expressly said in our book, to be an Alcoholics Anonymous member, you must be an alcoholic. You don't go to AA to overcome an eating problem. You should go to AA to overcome a drinking problem. You can be an alcoholic and whatever else. But the desire to stop drinking implies that you drink too much and you can't stop on your own, which is what we say in the first step. Our drinking's out of hand, and our ability to stop drinking is out of hand. So, singleness of purpose. Our number one priority is to carry the message to the alcoholic who still suffers, not someone who suffers from something else. We can understand and we can share with them and we can help them. As we say in Los Angeles, we read a preamble. It says, this is a meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous. All the participants you hear tonight will be alcoholics. This is an open meeting, so if you're a member of the community, you're more than welcome. We hope it helps you. If you have your primary problems other than alcohol, we suggest you go to a program, a 12-step program that more specifically addresses your problem. While you're here, we hope you gain something from what you're hearing. And we mean that. It isn't a matter of proving anything to anybody. It's called the singleness of purpose. Because if you just remember for a moment, those 100,000 Washingtonians who suddenly thought, we can heal every problem. And away they went. And they all went, they died. And I'll tell you, the people who do not address themselves with the singleness of purpose here eventually go down the toilet. Sooner or later the groups do. And you don't have to fight too hard about it because they don't seem to stay. That's why it's important that the traditions be addressed from time to time to remember what our primary purpose is. Because if we lose that edification, if it just gets a bunch of people with different problems getting up and talking about what they think, it is going to be very long before they're all down the toilet. I can guarantee you. The seventh tradition has been a problem, but it seems to be resolved now. A couple years ago, AA had a big financial reserve, and yet they began to see they were not self-supporting. That's not like a paradox, doesn't it? But they began to realize the income from the groups was not enough to sustain AA's world services and its various actions. And it was done, much of it, the support came from literature sales. And they had, like anybody who sells literature, the big buyers got the big discounts, and the little buyers got the little discounts. Now, who do you think is AA's biggest customer for the big book? Hazelden. Hazelden could buy the big book and undersell the local groups. And they were giving AA the most money of anybody in the world. And suddenly somebody began to realize, it has never happened, but if we become dependent on Hazelden or anybody else, the day may come when they say, would you mind changing just this one little thing? They who have the gold make the rules. And so they changed their discount policy, and everybody got the same discount. Literature prices went down last year to encourage everybody. Now they're back up. But AA is now attempting, working very hard to be self-supporting, even though it has a large financial reserve. But we must continue to be self-supporting. You know, that's one of the great hallmarks of AA, that we don't take anything from anybody, and it staggers people. But that means also, if we have a meeting in a hospital, if the hospital is paying for it, it's not an AA meeting. It is something else. An AA meeting is a self-supporting entity. If the hospital has said, here's the coffee, here's the cookies, here's the room, you don't pay anything, we'll just send these patients and you work on them, that's all very nice, but that's an institutional meeting then. That's not an AA meeting. AA meetings are self-supporting through their own contributions, even no matter how little. One of the problems today in dealing with secondary aids to alcoholism is the clubs, many parts of the country. They have clubs where the meetings and the clubs are the same thing. They just take the income from the meetings and give it to the club. And the club somehow does something with it for all week long. And those clubs rarely contribute to New York. They rarely contribute to the central office. They buy things from the club. And the group said, well, we're self-supporting. We're paying rent. But not really. They're not self-supporting. They are instruments of a secondary aid to AA. Alcoholics Anonymous groups must be self-supporting. Says the long form of the tradition, in a short time, we trust this goal will be reached. And it should be reached. And if a group is not self-supporting, can't become self-supporting, then it should go out of business. Because whatever it isn't AA anymore. But it's not a big thing. The traditions are quite clear. If you don't do it right, pretty soon you won't have an AA meeting. That's why many times when you get into meetings that are run by outside organizations, you go there and you can sit entire meetings and not hear a word about alcoholism, drinking, or recovery. You hear about codependency. You talk about notice, I've never known anybody who didn't come from a dysfunctional family. Yes, they were like the, I'm not putting it down at all, but the fellow, one of the fellows who spoke yesterday, yes, we were loving, and they gave me everything I wanted, but they didn't hug me. God, if you were a Norwegian Lutheran, you would never get hugged yet, you know. But that's the way people are. Love is, every family's dysfunctional, because we have an ideal in our mind, I suppose, of Robert Young sitting there with his pipe, and all of us can look around and say, well, I guess I love these kids, but there's no, that isn't Princess, and that thing in the kitchen isn't Jane Wyatt, I'll tell you that. As though everybody else has a wonderful, families are made up of human beings, and human beings are never perfect. They have problems. That's no big deal. That's why we have a fourth and fifth step to talk about those things, partially. I think that, but all these, but you go to AA meetings and hear about cocaine, heroin, codependency, dysfunctional families, psychobabble, and everything except what AA is about. Drinking, recovery, maintenance of recovery, dealing with living problems through Alcoholics Anonymous. I'm not saying that people can't talk about whatever they want, well, obviously, but it's a bad situation when in an AA meeting it's considered old hat to discuss AA. The other big one, that the last one I want to talk about this morning, is troublesome. Of course, is one that's been troublesome for years, ever since AA was founded. Anonymity. You know, Marty Mann broke her anonymity. They said, oh God, what if she gets drunk? Wouldn't that be terrible? Her previous psychiatrist, Dr. Thiebaud, who was able through his ministrations to keep building a 10-year depression. Dr. Thiebaud, again, I don't judge, I'm just reporting facts to you. Dr. Thiebaud says she may get drunk, I'm not sure. She may have a reinflation of ego at depth. But that's one of the ways, Raleigh Helmsley. But to people coming in today, it's still the same thing. Yes, it's nice to be anonymous. We want to protect AA. But wouldn't it, why can't we? Other people give testimonials, you know. Jesus, for a while, what's that Raleigh Hills out there in California? They'd have one movie star after another get up and do their commercials on TV, and their eyeballs would be dilated about this big. I no longer drink alcohol, and I owe it to Raleigh Hills. I don't touch alcohol anymore. The hand would come in. The hand didn't really come in, but you knew it was going as soon as the movie stopped. I mean, it's just baloney. It's, why can't AA do that? And I guess we have to, theory is we have to protect AA. And maybe at one time in the 1930s and 40s, they were worried about AA, but AA's withstood some great anonymity breakers. What's this woman who called I'll Cry Tomorrow? Lillian Roth. She decided to help AA against the advice of her sponsor and other people. She wrote this book, I'll Cry Tomorrow. She says, I'm an AA, now with all of these wonderful people, and it's, they say I shouldn't break my anonymity, but it's, I want to thank them. And a year and a half later, when she was face down on the streets of Palm Springs, goofed out on booze and pills, she didn't have much to say then. But AA survived that. She didn't survive it. AA survived it. Diana Barrymore wrote this book, Too Much Disease. I remember reading that years ago. It came out. She said at the end, I now go to AA. AA has helped me, and I'm a member of AA, but I found that I can't have wine with dinner. That was the last page of this. You ever see that? Read that. It's funny. And she was dead from wine wine with dinner in a couple of years. She must have had a long dinner one night. But there's always been anonymity breaks. And it becomes little by little aware, what is the spiritual premise of anonymity? And that is the big thing. And that's the thing why anonymity is so important. The people that break their anonymity don't hurt AA, but they seem to hurt themselves. In a sense, their effectiveness in AA begins to diminish, and it still happens. This woman who wrote the book last year, forget her name, about AA, they gave, Jan Morris? Ann Robertson, what do you mean Jan Morris? You live in New York, do you? Traditions, who knows about that? Do fool. Ann Robertson. They gave her complete access to all the AA files on one condition, that she would not break the traditions. And she finished her book. I remember AA. Blah, 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 and she broke three traditions in the first five pages. And she said, why not? It's going to help you. Maybe it will. But it removed the wonderful of the book. It's just another piece of self-aggrandizement. And I'm sure her effectiveness in AA has diminished considerably. She may be more famous, but her, because it's always that way. Because I'll tell you why. I think anyway. Instead of being a person who's being helped by AA, you have now put yourself in a position where you are helping AA. I have now risen above AA, and I'm going to let the people know that even a wonderful person like me is in their chicken shit little organization. Won't that be wonderful? And the people that do that nearly always have bad times after that. They nearly always have bad times after that. A few years ago, very active AA, semi-active AA, by that time, was running for president, and he couldn't get off the ground, so he finally announced he's a member of AA. And that didn't help me either. But from then on, he just was a crappy AA. He got into born-again Christian work, because he'd already helped AA all he could. And he's been goofy ever since. It's the same the whole world over. The reason for anonymity is what it means, to put principles before personalities. Now people say, well, they break my anonymity and I can't help it. That's baloney. In my experience, some of you know, because of the nature of my work, I get a lot of publicity. And much of it as a recovered alcoholic. 6-page article in the Reader's Digest a few years ago. I'm on television all the time in Los Angeles dealing with alcoholic problems downtown. News, full-page articles in the Times. Christ, I get more publicity than anybody should have. And there has never been an anonymity break in my life that I know of. Now, but people would say, you said you were a recovered alcoholic. You broke your anonymity. That isn't what it means. It means you must not publicly say you are a member of Alcoholics Anonymous. I can either say my name is Clancy I, and I'm an AA, where I can say, my name is Clancy Imeslin, and I'm a recovering alcoholic. But I cannot say I'm Clancy Imeslin, a member of Alcoholics Anonymous. I cannot use AA for self-aggrandizement, because then I get in that same position again of putting personalities ahead of principles. I must remain in the position, even though it's hard for me to remember sometimes, AA is helping me, I am not helping it. And we must all remember that, that Alcoholics Anonymous and its non-enforceable traditions, and its traditions that half of AA didn't want and some still defy, and there are groups in the country and in the world where they refuse to accept the 12 traditions in 1990. I mean, they are few and far between, but there's a few of them. I've been in one of them. We don't read the goddamn tradition. We don't believe in them. They don't even have the book 12 and 12 there because it's got the traditions in it. Now, it isn't the sort of place you'd want to go to find love, I don't guess, because they all old fools sit there and swing in the wind, but these traditions, non-enforceable, are something that must be observed. And the only bad thing about it is this. The only people who are interested in the traditions, usually, are the people who already are interested in the traditions. You know, the people who need to hear about the traditions are the young people sitting around the pool. I don't mean in this particular case, but anywhere, you know. Tradition meetings, nobody ever comes to a tradition meeting. I don't think we can go on a trip that day. And I understand that. I spent much of my life the same way. But what you got to come to remember, in a sense, your life depends more on the traditions in some ways than it does the steps. Because without a viable place to be, it doesn't make a difference what steps you work or what you do or how wonderful you are if you have no place left to share and identify and give and sacrifice and keep yourself less than leading in your own life's recovery. And that's why I think in our group, I'm not saying anyone else should do it, but in our group, we read the long form of the traditions once a month. We read the short form three times a month and the long form once a month so that newcomers keep hearing the reasons why these the short forms are just brrr, but you hear the long forms and net read it, they flesh it out, they tell why. And the end of it, I think, is the best reason why we should. Should we do it to become wonderful? Should we do it so that we will become a law and order society? Shall we do it so that the meetings will run smooth and start on time? Shall we do it that we'll have the best meeting in the world? No, for a much better reason. It's the last sentence of that 12 traditions in the long form. To me, it always is the touching thing. Why should I observe these traditions? Because. So that our great blessings may never spoil us, that we may forever live in thankful contemplation of Him who presides over us all. Thank you.
Thank you, Clancy. A reading from the Big Book. To those now in its fold, the Alcoholics Anonymous have made the difference between misery and sobriety, and often the difference between life and death. AA can, of course, mean just as much to uncounted alcoholics not yet reached. Therefore, no society of men or women ever had a more urgent need for continuous effectiveness and permanent unity. We alcoholics see that we must work together and hang together, else most of us will finally die alone. The 12 traditions of Alcoholics Anonymous are, we AAs believe, the best answer that our experiences has yet given to those ever-urgent questions. How can AA best function, and how can AA best whole and so survive? We'll close with the Serenity Prayer.